I'm just wanting to start this meeting by saying that the chairperson is unfortunately not available today. So that means we will have to elect a chairperson from the committee members. And I think without further delay, let's go right over to that, because the parliamentary rules make accommodation for the election of a acting chair for the session. So we can do that. And I will now then ask for people to maybe raise their hands in the with the icon, and then place their nomination for a chairperson, please. I see, Mr. Letsia, your hand.
Yes, good morning, Shanaz. I would like to, I'm not sure who's on the platform. I would like to nominate Honorable Mukachwa if she's on the platform.
Okay, I can confirm that she is on the platform and that we do have a quorum. We 7 members present. So we can elect and nominate. So, Ma'am Mukachwa, you've been nominated. Can I get an indication whether you accept this nomination? Just so that people know that you're here.
Good morning, Shanaz. I do accept the nomination. Thank you.
Okay. Can we have a seconder for that nomination? I see Marcy Bia.
Good morning, Shanaz. I second the name of Honorable Mukachwa. Thank you.
Okay, we've got Sibiya seconding that nomination. Any further nominations?
I wanted to say, because yesterday was International Women's Day, I think we're all agreeing. Okay. And the spirit of Women's Month, the new International Women's Month. Thanks.
Okay, anyway, don't see any further hands, so I take it there's no objections to Ms. Mukachwa being the chairperson of this meeting, so I declare that so then, that she will chair this meeting for us. Thank you, ma'am. I'm handing over the chair for you.
Thank you very much, Shanaz. Good morning to honorable members, and good morning to colleagues from the Department of Science and Innovation. This morning we'll be looking into, or we'll be receiving a briefing by the Department of Science and Innovation on the third quarter financial and performance report of the year 2020 and 2021. And we'll also receive an update brief on the research and innovation initiatives, as well as funding for research by the DSI and its entities in combating and responding to the COVID-19 pandemic. And then we'll close by considering minutes that we haven't done in a very long time. And the last time, I think it was the last time I was chairing, that we were supposed to go through the minutes and we didn't. So we do ask that honorable members try and ensure that they stay till the end of the meeting so that we can get through our minutes. I think it's, DG, you are here, if I'm not mistaken. Shanaz, before we go into the agenda, can you just check if there's been any apologies?
Okay, the apologies that I've received, Chairperson, was that of the minister who's doing a site visit this morning, and then he's attending the National Command Council meeting in the later in the day. And then from the member side, I've got Ms. Makesi.
Okay, there's a hand from, thank you, Shanaz. There's a hand from Honorable Mumalo.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning to you and honorable members and the team and the delegation from Science and Innovation Department. Chair, I will request that I be excused at around 11. I've got a rules committee to attend. I think it's starting at 11, so I will be in the meeting for the next hour or two, but I'll request that I be excused at that time. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Honorable Mumalo. I think those are all the apologies we then have, including the chairperson of the committee. Honorable Lipier, I see your hand has gone up.
It has gone down. I wanted to say Shanaz forgot to record officially the apology of the chair.
Okay.
Apologies. I thought
thank you, Honorable Lucia. With that one. Thank you, Honorable Lucia. So I mean, we're looking at the third quarter financial and performance report of the DSI for the year 2020-2021. And I think one of our greatest concerns from our previous meetings would have been, of course, the impact of the reprioritization of the budget as a consequence of COVID-19 and the government having to respond to COVID-19 and what impact that would have, particularly with regards to research and development in the department. And we were able to sort of indicate to the department make various recommendations on what to prioritize, and the department I think was able to bring us into confidence with regards to that. Relating to the DSI's work in combating or responding to COVID-19, I think there's without a doubt a lot of great work that's been done by it. And I think we all indicated towards the end of last year how proud we have been of the department and its leadership in terms of responding to the COVID-19 pandemic. Just recently, I think last week, honorable members would have seen on the news coverage on a young man, I think he's in his early 30s, Sandile Qele, if I'm not mistaken, and the amazing work he's been doing in terms of understanding this new variant that is prominent in South Africa. And I think it's very inspiring. Honorable Mananiso often speaks a lot about how we get young South Africans from an early age, from the time of which they're in school, to understand the various spheres of science and innovation, and how we ensure as a department that we continue to raise awareness around what young people can do in science and innovation. And I think, looking at the great work that's been done by Sandile Qele and his collective and everyone else who's been working with and various scientists in South Africa, it's without doubt that there's great inspiration that is transcending society in realizing, how important science and innovation is and how it can directly impact the lives of South Africans. I mean, right now, through science and innovation, we're trying to find ways on how to save people's lives, literally. So I think, one continues to be really proud of the work that's being done by the DSI, and we look forward to the two presentations that will be brought before us. I think I'll speak on the other matters later, but going to the issues around the budget for the DSI. I can't seem to see DG. I'm not sure who. Oh, yeah, DG is here. Okay, DG is here. DG Ndraha, I think I'll hand over to you to then continue with the presentation.
Thank you very much. With your permission, I'll probably switch the video off. I'm not so sure how good my connection is. And then I'll try and share the screen.
That's fine, DG. DG, your audio is quite low. I don't know if it's possible for you to increase it a bit, but I don't know if I'm the only one who's struggling with the volume from your side.
Is it better now?
Okay, can honorable members hear the DG clearly?
It's a bit far.
Oh, all right. I'll try and speak a bit louder. My volume is at the top, Chair.
Okay, DG. I think you'll have to apply a shop steward voice there. But you can switch off your camera.
All right, let's see if we can do that. It always helps. Where do I switch it off? Okay. My phone. I'm battling to find a place where I can.
Oh, what are you trying to achieve, DG?
I was trying to get the video off.
Okay, maybe we can help you from our side. How's that?
Yeah, if you can.
There we go. It's off now.
All right. Thank you very much, Chairperson. As I say, I'll try and shout a little bit more. So I hope you can see the presentation.
We can, DG.
All right. Thank you very much. So again, thank you very much for the opportunity to share with the members of the committee that we haven't seen for quite some time. We've been missing you as well on our side, but we are glad we are here today to share with you the progress that we are making on this third quarter report. So we will quickly go through the alignment of our work to the national priorities. This we have shared with you before, strategic outcome goals. We've done that before. So we'll probably focus on the highlights of the quarter, the performance review, both on the non-financial and the financial, and I'll ask the acting CFO to take you through the performance and then the conclusion. So we are here then to look at the third quarter performance. And as we have shown before, the alignment of the work of the department to the various outcomes, outcome 4, 5, 6, 7, and 10. And then our strategic goals are to have a transformed, inclusive and responsive, coordinated and efficient national system of innovation, human capabilities and skills for the economy and for development, increased knowledge generation and innovation outputs, and then knowledge utilization for both economic impact and inclusive development. And we're continuously looking for how innovation can support a capable developmental state. So maybe let's just give you some highlights of this quarter. We are almost done with the decadal plan. Yesterday, the minister gave us a go ahead to sign a CAB memo to cabinet to present the decadal plan. If the committee is ready and after this has been presented to cabinet in the next 2 weeks or so, we would be more than happy to come and share what is evolving on this. So it's still a bulky document, but we want to consult further and co-create. And one of the reasons why we would like to do so is that there are areas in the prioritization that you see, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members on the left-hand side, which requires that we co-create what we will do in these areas. For an example, on what we call secular economy and climate change, this work straddles approximately four government departments. One is the Department of Forestry Environment. The other one is the Department of Trade and Industry, the Department of Small Business. And therefore, in doing this work going forward, we are not only just looking at the science and technology of climate change, but science and technology and its impact to society as a whole. Education for the future and future of society, these areas would require that we work fairly closely with the Department of Social Development and the Department of Basic Education, Energy, Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, Health, and then High Tech Industrialization, TTIC, ICTs, DCDT, Nutrition and Water. We have to work with other government departments. So we then hope that we'll be given the go-ahead to define these much more tighter than they are in the document. We also have received the final report of the panel that did the Higher Education, Science, Technology and Innovation Institutional Landscape. And the two departments are currently reviewing the recommendations and what we need to include in the document. There are recommendations that we have already factored in the decadal plan, and there are others where we feel that they may take a little longer. And again, at an appropriate time, should the committee request that we share our views on this report, we would be more than happy to do so. As I've indicated, the minister is happy that we start to develop an innovation compact across society, and we have a draft of this. This is a compact where the funding for science, technology and innovation outside the ministry is then solicited and agreed to by the other line ministries. We also are looking at working with Treasury on a budget coordination system, because the feeling is that when you do have resources, they need to be locked in so that when there are other priorities, you don't then lose science, technology and innovation budget. So these are all areas that still require some detailed consultation, but the ideas have been put in the day kettle plan. On the investments that we are making on human capital development, we are happy to report that 4,374 honors students were funded, and 3,900 were black and 2,700 were women. And then master's students, 4,155, 3,392 black, 2,516 women. And out of the PhDs, 2,308 of these funded PhDs were black, and 1,611 were women. And then, of course, we also want to continue to look at disaggregating data so we know what's happening with disabilities or people with disabilities. We also are happy that we have 730 graduates and students that were placed in the science, engineering and technology institutions. 693 were black and 487 were women. And then as part of profiling the work of the awardees of South African Women in Science Awards, we're happy to say that we hosted a total of 4 webinars that attracted 663 participants that were held during the reporting period. 2 of these webinars titled Tackling Gender-Based Violence Towards an Enabling Science and Research Environment, and the other one was Women in Innovation and Launch of the Women in Science and Engineering Technology Organization, touched on gender violence, which we all know is a thorny issue in the country to be addressed. We are also happy that the Deputy Minister of Higher Education, Science and Innovation launched a 6-week hydrogen fuel cell training course on November 2020. We are trying our level best to integrate activities from science and innovation to higher education. So this was a training to develop competent, capable and work-ready technicians as we deploy and install the hydrogen fuel cell so that they are able to maintain these around South Africa and beyond. This training highlights the importance of both public and private sector partnership. And on the 10th of December, a training validatory and award ceremony for the 17 trainees was held at the University of Pretoria. On the research grants, 2,766 of these were granted through the NRF managed programs. 1,362 women, 1,539 black researchers were awarded through the NRF. We also continue to upgrade or to extend the 64 dish array of the Meerkat in Carnarvon. This will take the dishes to about 84 upon completion. And this is a partnership that we are having, Sarajevo, that they are having with the German Max Planck Gesellschaft, together with the Italian Istituto Nazionale di Astrofisica, ENAF, as a partner on the Meerkat expansion. I'm alerted that the portfolio committee might be visiting the site soon, so you'll probably be able to see the foundations after you've seen the 64-dish array in Carnarvon. We are also extremely happy to see that the National Intellectual Property Management Office has continued to play an enabling role in ensuring that we utilize knowledge for economic and social development. They continue to support the offices of technology transfer through the support fund that they provide. And then also they continued with awareness sessions that were held at the Gert Sibande TVET College in Mpumalanga, where approximately 300 individuals, including SMME students and community members, attended. And we are also extremely excited about the fact that at the Sefako Makgato Health Sciences University, an Office of Technology Transfer was formally set up, which will help the university in managing and identifying intellectual property from the university that could be commercialized. So we are really, really happy about this expansion. On the agricultural sector, we continue to support through the Agriculture Bioinnovation Program, the initiatives such as the Partnership for Grain and Oil Seeds, and we continue to expand the wheat breeding platform, Climate Resilience Consortium, Biosecurity Research Hub, and Human Capital Development. We also have been working with the Department of Agriculture to look at agro-processing in rural communities on those value chains that are shown, soybean food and nutrition program, aquaculture project, and sorghum value chain upgrade, and the work that this work has been doing. On the energy front, we are extremely delighted that we have approved a program between South Africa and Germany that looks at how you can harness the CO2 from coal and develop a range of products from this CO2. So X means that a number of products that can be developed from coal CO2. This is a dirty coal fire power station CO2 that then is used to produce sellable commodities and therefore reducing the greenhouse gas emissions. We are also happy that the roadmap for the Hydrogen South Africa program is now at its completion stage. So we will then be coming to the portfolio committee to share with you how we want to create an industry out of this program that we have been funding for quite some time. We've also continued to support innovation for service delivery and innovation for local economic development. And the highlights is that we continue to have the e-readiness tool, which is currently being employed to provide real-time data on the readiness of schools for ICT deployment. This is the work we're doing in partnership with the Department of Basic Education. And then we continue to work with certain municipalities to measure their ability to take innovation within the portfolio to improve service delivery. So we've developed this index. We've probably shared it with the committee. But what the index does is it rates municipalities' level of innovation readiness and maturity and provides recommendations on how to address some of these challenges. And this work is finding itself deep into the new district development model. We also continue to support the local innovation assessment toolkit. This is the work that we do in order to make sure that local innovation mapping and identification of high impact catalytic interventions are tracked through this system. And then we've also continued to have innovation champions for local economic development and youth journalists. This is a program that is located within district and local municipality, local economic development offices. So we are grateful about this work. In Vembe District, this work has started in earnest, and then we continue to work with through the partnership we have with SALGA municipalities that they recommend we work with. On the BRICS front, we are happy to say that we had a BRICS COVID-19 call with the BRICS partners. Projects that were recommended for funding include vaccines and drugs, genomic sequencing, artificial intelligence, ICT, and epidemiological studies. And 7 South African institutions will participate in the research. We also have meetings that took place, including the 10th BRICS Senior Officials Meeting, a BRICS Working Group, and the 8th BRICS STI Ministerial Meeting was also held last year. We also have had a number of regional conferences. As you can see here, we have the SANBI at the University of Western Cape has been chosen as one of the three regional reference laboratories in the World Health Organization network to provide sequencing data analysis, and are supported by an additional 9 laboratories for technical support services to countries where they are located, as well as to neighboring countries. And then the other centers such as the CRISP and the African Center of Excellence for Genomic Diseases in Nigeria are working together again as part of understanding the challenges of COVID-19. The committee, I think, was briefed recently of this study where we've allocated about 27 million rands to have the HSRC leading a study as part of the sector budget support program on South African National Gender-Based Violence and COVID-19 survey. And then we've had a number of joint ministerial bi-national commissions where the minister has participated in South Africa Lesotho meeting, and then of course others as well. We hosted, as you know, a very, very light hybrid virtual science forum South Africa in December 2020, and we are happy that the event has continued to enrich public discourse on the role of science in society. This time we were able to attract 1,223 attendees, small but still a good number for the situation we are in. So just quickly then to go through the performance information overview, you will see in the slide that 20, which is 59% of the targets, were achieved, and 14 were not achieved. And later on, we will explain which ones were not achieved. So this is the structure, the programs of the department. We have administration program 1, and then technology innovation program 2, and then international cooperation and resources program 3, research and development support program 4, and socioeconomic innovation partnerships program 5. So this slide shows you the achievement of targets and program 1, 33% of its target were achieved and 67 not achieved, 71 in program 2, 56 in program 3, 71 and 50 in program 5. So this is just a schematic or a bar graph that shows which ones have, how many have been achieved and the percentages that I've just shared with the members. So maybe just some specific quarter 3 achievements for administration, 6 platforms for profiling the work of the department. This target was achieved. On program 2, we have decision support tools that we develop and maintain. And here in particular, this is the work that we do to support genetic decision making with agriculture. And then 2 strategic and technical engagements with the agencies SANZA and TIA. This is important as part of making sure that good governance issues are tracked with the entities. And then as part of looking at disclosures from the offices of technology transfer from publicly financed research, we made that target. This is a very early indicator of how institutions see opportunities for IP that can be protected and hence develop products from. 2 technology demonstrations, prototype products and services achieved, and commercial outputs again achieved in program 2. And then in terms of South African students participating in international programs, 82 was the target, 92 was achieved. International policy dialogues, 11 was the target, we had 27. STI initiative supporting Agenda 2063 in the continent, this was achieved. Engagements with the global leaders to advance national priorities in multilateral forums, this was also achieved, as well as the new international STI initiatives that are focused on sustainable development goals. On program four, the number of PhD students, we showed this in the highlights. Pipeline students, so these are honors students, master's students, we call them pipeline students. This was achieved. The postgraduate students that are placed in DST-funded work preparation programs, 730 graduates out of a target of 650, and then the researchers that were awarded research grants through NRF-managed programs also achieved. On the SKA, the science mode receivers that have been installed, which means we are able now to have projects that are conducted on the Meerkat extension. This was achieved. And then there were three bilateral engagements that we were supposed to have with the Academy, the NRF, and the South African Council for Natural and Scientific Professions. On program five, three knowledge products on innovation for inclusive development done. Annual work plan approved for at least 10 decision support systems. I highlighted what these are, and four learning interventions were hosted. And then 14 industrially relevant knowledge or innovation products added to the industrial development IP portfolio. This was also achieved. So maybe just quickly, which ones were not achieved? The reasons are process delays, ineffectiveness of implementers, and target formulation deficiencies. So on the process delays, this refers to factors which are outside the control of the department at the time of submitting, and therefore achievement of such targets is mainly dependent on outside circumstances, such as not being able to get into clusters or not being able to present on time. Non-achievement due to deficiencies during implementation phase, this is ineffectiveness of the implementers. Some of the work we do through partners outside ourselves, and then sometimes we keep trying to improve on how better to formulate targets. So these were not done on time, and this is the first draft APPs and shareholders compact for public entities. And the reasons are that the CSIR as a Schedule 3B is on a different planning schedule compared to the other entities. The entities were requested to submit the first draft of the shareholders compact by the 30th of November, but this has been sorted out now because they have all submitted their APPs and the minister has almost approved all of them. So you will be, as the committee, receiving these fairly soon. At the time, we were a bit delayed on the approval for the Tekel plan to cabinet, but as I've shared with you, so both these at the time of formulating the report were not achieved, but we think that both of them would be achieved. And then the infrastructure tender delay, the design of the building has been completed and the tender for the construction has now been issued. This is the work that we do depending on our colleagues from public works and infrastructure. And then the training program for upskilling intellectual property management, we couldn't do this because of COVID, so it's likely not to be achieved. And international leveraging sourcing and engagements, again, we would expect that this would not have happened. Capacity building initiatives for international cooperation, this has been delayed. And then STI initiatives supporting the SADC Regional Indicative Strategic Development Plan. Again, this indicator has been delayed, but Dan can give us a sense of where we are. STI Plan of Action implemented with bilateral African partners has been delayed. And then I will ask Yona to give us an update. At the time, there were delays or IKS Act regulations finalization were delayed, but I think this is now back on track. I'll ask Yona, as I say, hope he's online to give us an update. And then there was a delay on the statistical report approval because they were not able to get the field work completed on time. And then we requested that the entity, CEST, that is doing this work for us at the HSRC, do further work on some reports. But I think Mr. Patel, if he's online, we've been able to address this now. And then we always have a little bit of a challenge in terms of pre-approval decisions provided within 90 days on 80% of the application. So this is likely not to be met unless Imran has a different view. And then these are just delays on having formal bilateral executive meetings with our entities. These were slightly delayed, but I think we are now back on track on this one, as far as I remember. And then 1,400 presidential youth employment initiative beneficiaries. At the third quarter, there were no beneficiaries. And then we only received confirmation of the funding late in September. And even when we received the funding, we couldn't receive the funding for the total amount. But I think as EXCO, we have approved that the reprioritization be done internally so that we can achieve this number. And I think we probably have approval from Treasury at this point in time. So that's where I'd like to end, Chair. And then if the CFO is available, I'm happy to run the slides from my side. Robert?
Morning, DG, and morning, everyone. I can go through with the slide, DG, but you'll have to just go through it for me. Thanks, DG. Morning, everyone. Morning, Chair, and morning, members. Morning, DSI executives. I'm going to share with you how we have performed for the third quarter as far as the finances of the department are concerned. What is presented there is how much we have under various line items. As Chair had indicated in her opening statement, she indicated that there were cuts that were effected on our budget. You know, after the cuts, we were left with 7.2 billion. Next slide, please. Okay, in the third quarter, we planned to spend 6.6 billion. But we managed to spend 5.7 billion, which is 79.5% of our adjusted budget. It translates to 828 million, which is 12.5% of the planned budget. As members can see, there is a significant improvement in spending in the last quarter as compared to the two quarters. In the last quarter, in the second quarter, we had a variance of 24.7%. And in this quarter, we've got 12.5, which is a significant improvement from the last quarter. As DG indicated, we had effected environment amounting to 133 million from slow spending activities. And part of that environment was approved by the National Treasury, which is 128 million. And DG approved 5 million. Next slide, please. This is an overall, bar chart of how we have spent. As members can see, our planned spending, as I had indicated, was 6.6 billion, and we only spent 5.7 billion, and we have a variance of 828 million. Next slide, please. This is the spending according to various classes. Under compensation, we plan to spend 273 million. We only spent 245 million with a variance of 28 million, which is 10.3%. Under goods and services, we planned to spend 124 million. We only spent 65 million, and we have a variance of 58 million, which is 47%. And under transfers and subsidies, we plan to spend 6.2 billion. We only spent 5.3 billion. We have a variance of 111 million, and which is 1.8%. Under payment for capital assets, we plan to spend 3.4 million. We spent 2.7 million. We have a variance of 164,000, which is 18.8% a variance. Next slide, please. The reasons for us not spending as we had planned. There is one of the reasons is that the nationwide lockdown delayed filling of some of the critical positions. And also we did not appoint our special science and technology representatives, those that are placed in the missions. And also there was a reduction in our compensation budget, which it is reducing over a period. Now, if you look at this, if we have a budget of, 100 million over the next 3 years for each year, but the budget reduced over those 3 years, then it means some of the positions that that were, were vacated in the current year won't be filled, because if we filled them, it would mean in the next 2 to 3 years, we will be overspending. So that played also a critical role in us, filling the position that we could have filled this year. So we had that in mind to say, if we fill all the positions, we have the likelihood of overspending in our compensation budget in the next few years. So some of the positions were delayed. We only focused on critical positions, which delayed, had an effect on our compensation of employees. Next slide, please. Under goods and services, the COVID played a significant role in our spending. The most services, like the budget vote, we could only hold them virtually. There are quite a number of, public participation that could not take place. They were cancelled. And our expenditure was mainly under communications. Those are items that do not need officials to, to move out of their, safe areas. So that played a significant role. But SDG indicated we moved funding from slow spending areas in goods and services and moved them to transfer and subsidies and other areas that are overspending or are having financial needs to mitigate against underspending in this area. The next slide, please. Under transfer and subsidies, most of the reason for us not spending, DG did indicate in the reasons for not performing. Some of them, as indicated, process delays, administrative delays, late submission of reports, the closure of the building, officials not being able to process transaction, closure of some of the institutions that are implementing some of our work. So those played a significant role in us not being able to spend. But as we have indicated, we have moved about 111 million to affected areas to ensure that there is no significant underspending in that area. Next slide, please. This is a financial performance per programs. Under program one, we planned to spend 237 million. We only spent 182 million with a variance of 52 million. Then we've got 23% variance. Under program two, we plan to spend 1.299 billion. We only spent 1.123 billion. And we couldn't spend 175 million. We have a variance of 13.5%. In program three, we plan to spend 97 million. We only spent 72 million, and we couldn't spend 24 million. We have a variance of 25 million. Under program four, we plan to spend 3,512 million. We only spent 3,171 million. We couldn't spend 341 million in the program with a variance of 9.7%. Under program five, we plan to spend 1,467 million. We only spent 1,235 million. We have a variance of 231 million, which is 15.8%. Next slide, please. This one is the detail of some of our projects, programs in the department, how they have performed. Under program two, technology innovation, our biofuel line item had spent all its allocated budget. The only area that we have challenges there is emerging research areas that did not spend anything, but we are confident that that money will be spent. Part of it has already been spent in the past 2 months. We are confident that it will be spent all of it by the end of the financial year. And then the IKS also is overspending. We have tried by all means to get funding elsewhere to ensure that we do not overspend in some of our line items. Next slide, please. Still on program two, our innovation project, It has a variance of 62. SDGD indicated some of these funds will be reprioritized to, you know, as those line items that are spending very well, that are moving very well, and those that are not spending, the funding will be taken away from them. As you can see, also the technology transfer offices, this funding will be spent by the end of this year. Next slide, please. The reasons for variances, why we did not spend on some of the line items. Emerging research areas, the variance was slow spending by implementing agent, and the variance was affected in the budget, and the remaining budget will be spent in the current financial year. Innovation projects, also environment was affected, as I indicated, and the remaining budget will be spent in the current financial year. The technology transfer, it was due to slow down the offices, but this one would also be spent in the current financial year, as payments have already, when we prepared the reports, were already been affected, processed. Next slide, please. Sorry. Under Program 4, Research, Development and Support, the area that is challenging is cyber infrastructure. A significant amount of money was taken out of this, reprioritized to other areas, but this funding will be spent in the current financial year. Some of it is, as far as you know, it has been spent as we speak now. And human resource development, there are processes underway to spend the 12 million that is not spent. Next slide, please. Still on Program 4. Research and development infrastructure, we have underspending of 243 million. Part of it will be prioritized, and others, part of it will be spent in this financial year. Square kilometer array, we have a variance of 34. The 34 will be spent in the current financial year, and this area is one of the areas that we really need significant amount of money. Strategic science platform, it will also be spent in the current financial year. Next slide, please. Cyber infrastructure, this is the result, as I've indicated, slow spending by the implementing agent. As I've indicated, some of the reasons are repetitive. DG had indicated when he was presenting what are the reasons for non-spending or non-performing in the performance side, which are correlated. If we are not spending the performance side, or we are still in the finance side, there will be challenges. With regard to research and development, the variance was mainly due to spending under the SARIR projects, and as a result of contracting in the high-end infrastructure. The science platforms, payments were delayed due to the consolidation of the contract, but this one also, it has been paid as we speak. Next slide, please. Under Program 5, advanced manufacturing, a significant amount of money was shifted in this line item to cover the areas that are spending very well. And in environmental innovation, some of these, as I've indicated, they will be spending the current financial year, but the significant amount of some of these items, they will be shifting to those areas that are spending very well. Next slide, please. Local manufacturing capacity as well, it is not spending very well, but we will spend in this current financial year, and also local system of innovation. And mining research, there was environment also affected in this line item. And research-based industries as well, this one will also be spent in the current financial year. Next slide, please. The amount, the variance, as we've indicated, is the finalization of the contract, and part of the money will be processed in this current financial year. But as I've indicated, part of it will be reprioritized. The mining R&D, this one, as a result of the delays, there won't be any, the money in this line item was reprioritized to other areas, and the other resource-based industries, the money will be spent in the current financial year, as I've indicated. Next slide, please. We have also put money aside for COVID-related spending. We put 343 million both under transfers and under goods and services. Under transfers, we put 341 million and under goods and services, 2 million was put aside for COVID-related activities. And the next slide, please. We are also sharing with you our spending on procurement, how we have performed up to the end of December. At the end of December, we spent 14,500,000, and then we spent as per, you know, when we split it according to various slices of our economy. Under small medium enterprise, we spent 5 million. And then under black companies, we spend 11 million. Women-owned companies, we spend 5 million. Youth-owned companies, we spend 1 million. And which is 78% under black-owned, 38% women-owned, and 10.1% under youth. Next slide, please. Under COVID spending, so far we have spent 474. This is in goods and services. It's not in transfers. And small and medium enterprises spend 350,000. Black companies spend 424. Women we spend 113,000. And the youth and owned companies we spend 393,000. Next slide, please. We have how we have performed in terms of paying our invoices. Our average payment days for the for the past quarter, it was 10 days on average. We try by all means to pay all our invoices within 30 days. Although in the past few quarters, because of the COVID challenges, there were two periods where we could not pay all the invoices within 90 days. Next slide, please. As I've indicated, April to July, we spend 100%. August, September, we couldn't spend 100%, and also November. As a result of COVID challenges, we were not able to pay 100%, but in December, we managed to pay 100%. And if I recall, the past 2 months as well, we were able to pay 100% of all our invoices. Thanks, DG. I think that is the last slide. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. If the chair agrees, I'm going to stop. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, DG, and thank you very much to your CFO as well. I thought perhaps we could shoot straight into the next presentation as well. On the interventions of the department and in response to COVID-19, because some of these matters may be overlapping. So I think it would be best if we could just allow members to make comments and ask questions all at once. So if you're ready, DG, do you mind if we go into the second presentation?
Yes, Chair, loaded up. I'm going to ask Mboneni to just come close because he was hoping to join us at 10:30. Just give me a few minutes. I'll load the presentation solo.
Okay. So maybe do members mind if we start with the next presentation at 10? So maybe we can all go for a body break if needs be. So DG, at 10, we'll start with the presentation on COVID.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. We'll be ready.
Okay. Okay, thank you very much, honorable members and colleagues. I saw Mr. Mboneni hop on at 10, so I thought I'd just give him a minute extra to settle into the meeting. DG, I think we should be ready to get your presentation on your on the response of the department to COVID and the various work that you've been doing in responding to responding and supporting, I guess, the work of the Department of Health and generally the government at large in responding to COVID-19. Are you ready, DG?
Yes, Chair. I'm going to share the presentation and Mboneni is with me. We'll be ready to then speak to the presentation. Let's just make sure.
There's an echo from your side. I don't know if you and DG are in the same room or what's causing the echo.
Good afternoon, is that better? No, it's not.
No, there's a device that's still on, another device that's still on. Okay, now we can't hear anyone, so I'd ask that Mr. Mboneni unmute himself and then let's see how that goes. Or DG, you've unmuted yourself.
Yeah, so
there we go.
Use one computer.
Okay. Okay, that's fine.
Thank you so much, honorable members. I just want to thank you for the opportunity to do this presentation. This is really about the response by the department in terms of assisting in government's overall response to COVID-19. As the whole disaster started to unfold, one of the things was that prior to even us having cases in South Africa, we had then started to plan together with our scientists as to what is it that we need to do. So there were a number of projects that at the time were actually put into place or agreed to. So the first one were strategic projects that were done jointly with the Medical Research Council. And these were focusing on surveillance, epidemiology, and community engagements. And community engagements was really just making sure that the country keeps being aware of what the science of COVID 19 and the virus is about. So in order to do that, it is important to note that there wasn't really a budget allocated to COVID. So we then had to repurpose some of our allocations from other projects. So as this thing was unfolding, we also started to have a lot of approaches from researchers at universities and science councils who said, look, we also want to come up with a number of projects. So what we then decided to do was to set up a technical team that was going to help us evaluate these projects. And again, we kept having to repurpose some of the money to make sure that the research was properly coordinated. So the selection committee was quite useful in ensuring that the projects that we were doing were actually relevant to helping South Africa's response to COVID-19. Now, the priorities that we had in terms of our research basically was for us to understand the virus, its natural history, the transmission, and also the diagnostics. Then we also have to appreciate the animal and environmental research on the virus origin so that at least our management of the disease must be informed by our appreciation of the human-animal interfaces. Then there were epidemiological studies. This is where we kept having a sense of how this disease was going to be spreading. And as a result of that, you may recall that there were advices that were coming out in terms of the fact, for example, that the outbreaks and the peaking were going to be different in different provinces because of the appreciation of what were the other factors that were actually impacting on the spread. Then the issue of clinical characterization and management, infection prevention, and the whole thing around healthcare, water protection. And here you would appreciate that when we started, there was all sorts of gimmicks that were being done. For example, people were doing this whole tunnel disinfections and all sorts of that. But with the research that was being done, a lot of information started to come through science that some of these things were actually not necessary. For example, it was not necessary that when you had a case, you must close for 2 weeks. People started to appreciate that you actually just needed to close for whatever number of hours to disinfect and then continue with your work. Then the issue around candidate therapeutics, here this is research that included looking at those existing drugs that people were claiming they can be repurposed to deal with matters of COVID-19. The honorable members may recall that there were talks, for example, around hydrochloroquine, etc. We were part of that work, some of it being done under the Solidarity banner, which is why even when the rest of the world was talking about hydrochloroquine being effective, we couldn't come out to support that because we had already been doing that kind of work. Then we also started to look at possibilities around candidate vaccines. Here, it was clear that because of the amount of work and investment that has already been happening globally around vaccines development, we were only going to participate partly in terms of providing information on the genomics of the virus and also where necessary do clinical trials, because the aspect of actual vaccine development were being taken care of under huge investments that were deployed. Then there's matter of ethical consideration for research and also how we deploy our social sciences research in managing this particular outbreak. This is where the work, for example, that was being done under the HSRC would now come into focus. So this is really just a summarization of some of the projects that we funded, which institutions and who were the primary project investigators. And again, this is just a listing of the project. But what I also need to highlight here on this slide that is found is the issue around testing and diagnostics. We may recall that the April and March and May were very difficult years globally in terms of the shortage of testing and diagnostic kits. So as a result, we started to think about building our own capabilities locally to manufacture, to develop and manufacture the testing kits. So there were a number of projects. We made a call and we put aside about 18 million rands for this work. And this is really just an indication of some of the projects that were funded. The bulk of them were looking at PCR testing. But we also started to work on the quick diagnostics, which is the one that uses your antigens and also your antibodies. And this is quite crucial in just making sure that people understand whether a person has been infected or not, as opposed to clarifying whether the person is currently infected by the virus. So those are two differences. But what I'm pleased to report here is that these projects have been progressing well and they are now at a stage where they have approached the South African Health Regulatory Authority for approval of their various testing kits. And what we have been doing there was, even though we were targeting COVID, our biggest vision was to make sure that in future, when we have other outbreaks, we are not going to have to be waiting for the shipping of diagnostic kits from all over the world. And in this case, the whole world seemed to have been looking predominantly at Germany, the US, and China. So we therefore need to be in future playing. That is really why we had this particular project. I think in terms of what we would want to bring forward here is the fact that we have been able to respond as quickly as we did as a country. It's not just on the basis of the projects that were initiated last year, but it was on the basis of what the department has invested over the years, some of which over the time people didn't appreciate why we were doing it. However, now when we are able to stand up and as a country alert the United Kingdom to the fact that they've got a variant on the basis of the work that we do here, there is a sense of beginning to appreciate all that investment that we have done over the years. So, for example, the role that has been played around CAPRISA. CAPRISA was established mainly to deal with HIV and AIDS research, but the capacity that we've built there was very central in and continues to be central in our fight against COVID. The KwaZulu-Natal Research and Innovation platform as well has been the pillar of working with the NHLS in identifying all those variants. And the critical thing about the identification of variants is that it also enables the vaccine manufacturing companies to actually align and make sure that their vaccines are effective. Because if you don't do this surveillance work, you will probably develop vaccines that will never work. So this is really where we begin to see our investment starting to bear fruit. The other point that I want to highlight also is, you may recall that there were at some point a lot of outbreaks that were happening in hospitals. One of them that was quite problematic was the breakout at St. Augustine Hospital. Again, all our laboratories were able to be used to map out the problems in terms of this epidemiological outbreak and advise the provinces, not only in the KwaZulu-Natal area, but the same situation as the problem was unfolding in the Eastern Cape. The CRISP, for example, was actually called in to assist. One of the fears that we had when the outbreak of COVID started in the country was how this was going to impact, for example, those who were living with HIV and AIDS, those who were living with TB, and those who were living with hypertension and diabetes. And we therefore, out of the research that was done, were able to establish that on HIV and AIDS, as long as people were taking their treatment, they were as at risk of infection as anybody else who was healthy. So in other words, if you stick to your regimen, you were fine. However, you may also recall that it is the same study that actually presented to us some of the results that indicated, for example, that those that were sitting with sugar diabetes were at the highest risk of succumbing to COVID-19. And it also helped in terms of how do you then fight and make sure you deal with this vulnerability by making sure that people who are concerned must have a certain way of checking themselves. And again, I need to say that this is the particular result outcome that is also going to guide the process of vaccination in terms of those that are sitting with various comorbidities. So we have been able to share, as you may have seen over and again, when the results come out, the press releases are done in partnership with our sister department, the National Department of Health. This is just to make sure that our response as a country is actually properly coordinated. And again, dealing with issues of the impact of COVID-19 beyond just it being the diseases on mental health and also on other socio-economic activities. So those were some of the work that out of the science of the research that we supported was actually being taken care of. I think we are now aware that one of the things that we have participated in is actually around the solidarity trials, the number of trials that were being done locally. Some are still being done as I'm speaking for those vaccines that are not yet approved. But in terms of those that have been approved, we've got the Oxford trial that was done here and also the Johnson & Johnson. So we therefore can say that we have been part of the value chain in the development of vaccines as a country. And this work was also being funded from the department. Then there's also work that was being done around the collection of plasma for use in other clinical trials. And this is really where, for example, we just had in January that out of the blood that was collected by the Southern National Blood Services, that in the Eastern Cape could actually have had more than 50% of its population infected. This is really, of course, being extrapolated from the data of the donors that were being evaluated. So again, this is an exciting work of how various aspects of government entities are working together to provide data to drive our response to COVID. We have spoken a lot about the modeling capabilities and the putting together of various data for decision making. I'm not going to go deeper into that. But what is also important is that when there was high demand for testing and we were running short of laboratories to do that, we were also able to convert some of our laboratories, be it at the CSIR, be it at universities, be it at the International Center for Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology, and also at CPGR, which is one of the platforms under the Technology Innovation Agency. These were also converted to assist the NHLS in terms of doing the testing. And again, that just shows that our investment over the years in building science capabilities has not been in vain. So we also talk about some of the trainings and such testing. This is what I've been talking about around such testing in terms of how our labs were being put together. And this slide just shows the network that we have been able to build, that when we look at genomic surveillance, for example, and we are able to come out boldly and say, we have identified a particular variant and this is how problematic it is. So these are the network of laboratories that actually confirm. And after they have confirmed the work that has been done in one lab, we are then able to share the same information, for example, with the World Health Organization, with the Africa CDC, and the rest of the world. And we are proud to say that we have actually been able to provide advice scientifically that has never been found wanting, even as we share this data with the rest of the world. We did announce the emergence of the SARS-CoV-2 lineage, which is called 501YV2, which is now the dominant variant that is infecting South Africans. As I said, we've already been part of the identification of the one that is now was identified firstly in the UK and is now in more than 100 countries. The one that was identified here is in more than 50 countries. So we're beginning to see that the work that we're doing is actually also being recognized globally. For example, in one of the presentations that we have made, we have shown how in the US, the work that has been done by certain scientists was actually part of the front pages of the New York Times and also highlighted in the NIH website, NIH being really the biggest World Research Organization, which is based in the US. So this is basically the acknowledgement that the work that we're doing through South African Science is indeed global in nature. So there are a number of high publication impact that we have had. A number of our publications are actually coming out in Nature Medicine, which is quite exciting. We have looked at the work that the HRC has done, for example, in terms of surveying of the impact and looking at how we needed to respond. Because one of the challenges that we sit with is that the COVID has also exposed some of the inequalities that we have. For example, when we say we are going to talk about social distancing, there is an impact on people who are staying in a you know, 100 square meter plot and it's 20 households. So those are some of the things that we begin to say, how do we then deal with those challenges? And it was this kind of work that has also, in working with other government departments, informed decisions around de-densification of some of the families into specific areas. And here, again, we were able to use the data from the Space Agency to plot where the densification is problematic and how this de-densification can actually be carried out. So the work has actually been quite crucial on the social side, just before, I mean, beyond just looking at the hardcore sciences. Again, I've spoken about the development of the diagnostics, and we also know about the work that was done with the CSIR and the SKA in terms of the manufacturing of the ventilators, non-invasive ventilators, which are actually quite useful for South African situation. So that, again, it just shows how some of the capabilities we have been called into action, which include project management and also just the design and 3D printing, which sits in some of our centers under the Technology Innovation Agency, the tech stations. This is just to show some of the things that we have done. The mobility platform to take people movement. People may be aware that a lot of the predictions around the possible hotspot was also assisted by some of the tracking of the mobility using the partnerships we had with various mobile telephone companies. Again, this just shows that work is quite crucial, our science work was quite crucial, including the use of surveillance or sampling of water from sewages in order to pick up where some of the hotspots were emerging by picking up the viral components in sewage waste. This slide just shows some of the partnerships towards clinical trials and development of vaccines. Some of them are plant-based vaccine remedies, which, for example, include the work that is being done at the CSIR in partnership with Kentucky Bioprocessing, and also where the DBSA is looking at making some investments. So we are also working to now look at the preparedness for future pandemics, but also the honorary members may be aware of the assignment that we've been given by the president around the development of local vaccine manufacturing in South Africa, work that is already underway, taking the approach that we call One Health approach, which is looking at both animal and human vaccines, because we know that this interface is quite crucial in managing future outbreaks, given the fact that COVID is one of those zoonotic diseases that started from animals. We also are pleased that one of the research platforms that we triggered was around the African traditional medicine. And here we looked at various remedies. Some of them were local, some were being internationally claimed. And what we have done is we are now pleased to announce that we've got some exciting results in terms of how some of the remedies are able to deal with the symptoms. And we are now engaging with the Southern Health Regulatory Authority to be able to proceed into the final stages of clinical trials. And then obviously very soon we'll be able to say, yes, we have indeed now found some remedies that are potent in dealing with COVID-19. These are some of the projects listed here that we did under Indigenous Knowledge System, and we're quite pleased that on the basis of this work, we are also working with the University of Free State under Professor Matsavisa, establishing a facility that will also help us manufacture some of these remedies when they are ready. It already is helping us manufacture other remedies for different ailments. Progress and future plans. This is again to indicate some of the exciting results. You will see that the products, we are not actually mentioning what they are made of, but we're just giving them names because the aspect of what they are made of is actually a subject of various intellectual property implications. So we would probably not go into saying this is how they were made, but we give them names. For example, we talk about product in Cabine, which was also used in dealing with matters of HIV and AIDS. And here, I'm also pleased that we're not only doing this work locally, we are also getting our work confirmed by international universities, where we're partnering, for example, with the USA universities and Canada and Germany. So the one thing that we are now working on is in terms of just the National Policy Data Observatory. Now, a whole lot of what's going to help us fight and succeed in dealing with not only COVID, but also future pandemics is how we've got a coordinated data policy. And here is to make sure that all our systems, which by and large exist, but just need to be reconnected so that we can have data that will be that will enable government to plan and to take decisions in an informed manner. So this really is work that we're doing now, being led by our DG, but involving State SA, the South African Receiver of Revenue, and government departments such as DPME, because they deal with a lot of monitoring and evaluation, National Department of Health and COGTA, and as well as working with the Auditor General's Office and the GCIS. And the institutions that are involved listed there, HSRC, CSIR, SAPRIN, SANSA, NIH, and a whole lot of other academia. So we are really now, as it has been said during the heart of COVID, that we need to not waste this particular disaster and pandemic. So we are really beginning to build a blueprint of how a well-coordinated government is going to respond to disasters in future. So these are some of the products that we are developing and have developed to date in terms of data. The health status product, the district profiles, the mobility reports. The mobility reports, I've spoken a little bit about it in terms of how it then helps you to do targeted curfews and restrictions. The district barometer, socioeconomic and political surveys, et cetera. So these products are what is really going to begin to become the backbone of our response going forward. And as and when necessary, more and more products that are relevant will be added, as will the various relevant government departments with time. So this is really just a summary in terms of what the department has been doing in assisting our government to respond to COVID-19. Thank you so much. I will then take comments and questions as the Honourable Member deems fit. Thank you.
We have to get out of here at 11, Minister next to the room. So we'll just...
All right. can you stop sharing, DG, the presentation, please?
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, DG, and thank you very much to all the presenters from the department this morning. We'll now go into questions and comments from honourable members. So honourable members can just indicate their intention to engage this morning. DG, while I wait for members to indicate their intent to engage, just a few questions from myself, and I'll come in later as well. Just quickly to clarify, when we refer to Black, which races specifically are we referring to? And then one must also indicate their appreciation for the efforts of the DSI to continue doing awareness work despite the fact that people can't meet physically. I think that was something that was mentioned greatly last year when we last met, and we've seen efforts by the department to go ahead with that. On page 9 of your presentation, DG, with regards to the third quarter report, there's a slide that speaks to webinars that were held that spoke by and large to gender matters. I think one of them spoke to how to tackle gender-based violence. And this is also just informed by a presentation we received, if I'm not mistaken, was it last week, with regards to the survey, the week before, with regards to a GBV survey that will be done by the HSRC. And I think for me, a big question that always comes out in terms of the public sector working in silos when it comes to addressing many social ills or tackling various matters in society. And so the question would then be, do we believe that there's enough effort by ourselves as a department and our entities to make sure we create linkages between the work of the various entities, these webinars that we have, to get to a point where we can bring forth empirical recommendations and take homes with regards to addressing, in this case, gender-based violence and other various social ills. So, you know, once we have these conversations, DG, I think it's very important that we're able to take actionables from these conversations, because people are really tired of us speaking as public reps and as government. I think also on page 10, with regards to the 6-week hydrogen full cell training course, can we have an indication on how the representation looked like at that particular initiative? If we could break it down in terms of representation, maybe you could look at race, gender, and age as well. And then I think just sticking on to the theme of representation, there was great emphasis when we last met last year, DG, with regards to, particularly after we spoke about we looked into the reprioritized budget for the department. There was a lot of conversation around representation as we respond to COVID-19 and the various initiatives that will be taken upon by the department and its entities in responding to COVID-19 and making sure that representation finds expression as we do that particular work. And I mean, when you look at the second presentation that was given to us with regards to the department's response to COVID-19, you know, a lot of work has been done. And in addressing the injustices and inequities of the past, DG, you know that we are unapologetic about the fact that we need to ensure that there's representation in all the work that we do. And when we speak of representation, we speak about an intersectional makeup, an outlook of representation. I think one would also just want to know if the department's able to make an analysis, DG, of where the work we've done under COVID-19, under which programs it particularly falls under. Are we doing lots of research work? Are we doing lots of work in terms of infrastructure and technology development and innovation? And have we been able to categorize the different work we've been doing under the various programs of the department and outcomes of the department, even looking into the international leg of the department and noting that, you know, there have been work that South Africa has done in collaboration with other countries and within international organizations as well. I think also a great aspect of you know, matters that are key to this portfolio committee historically since the start of the SIP administration, linking the work of the DSI to ground issues, various social ills, legacy inequities and historic inequities, linking the work of the DSI to a direct impact of that has been of great discourse to this portfolio committee. And I think in the second presentation that was given to us, it's very one appreciates the fact that there is an intent by the DSI to make sure that whatever we're finding in trying to curb COVID-19, we're able to link to legacy inequities. And I think it's very important, again, DG, for us to make sure that we can bring forth empirical recommendations to the various departments in order for us to be able to address these matters going into the future. I think it would be so important for us as a country to come out even stronger post-COVID-19 in really understanding the challenges that we have and really coming forth with, because I don't think South Africa will ever be the same after COVID-19. So it will be very important for us to really think, think through innovation these various matters going into the future. And of course, there's been a lot of concern around the conclusion or the finalization of a decadal plan. In his absence, the chair, Mapulane, has been very passionate and committed to trying to address this matter around the decadal plan. And, there is an indication that there was challenges around having various stakeholder consultations which could have led to a delay in some of the work around the decadal plan. And I want to understand if we weren't able to fully maximize the utilization of Zoom platforms, Microsoft or whatever online platforms, or was there a concern around a possible exclusiveness of such platforms in trying to finalize this? And then there's been a lot of, there was a peak in terms of Indigenous knowledge systems at some point and the use of Indigenous knowledge systems in responding to COVID-19. And everyone wanted to use Umhlonyane and Lingana and anything else that was Indigenous. And at some point there was a backlash on the use of Indigenous knowledge systems, and it's all almost like there was a mobilization and then a demobilization of society. And I think, I mean, some of the, what I would refer to as falling under the demobilization would speak to concerns around the overuse or the misuse of Indigenous knowledge systems or traditional medicine. But I think what's most important is not to have the extremes of mobilization and demobilization, but to rather have an ability for us to truly educate and make society aware of how to use whatever medicine it may be. The abuse of anything in life generally is problematic. So, because one then becomes concerned, DG, to say, is there an attempt to somehow, noting the fact that we live in a society with the type of stigmas we have around Indigenous knowledge systems, could there be an attempt to demobilize, unfairly so, and incorrectly so, and maliciously so, the booming of the Indigenous knowledge system, network, falling under traditional medicine in our society? Because I think, I mean, when having engaged with members of, the traditional medicine network of South Africa, there was a great excitement, and we want the continuation of that excitement. I think it's time. And the IKS Act, when you look at it, it's all about promoting Indigenous knowledge systems. So I think the peak of conversation and the use of traditional medicine was such a great turn for South Africa. So, I guess the question becomes, what then is the role of the department in managing these various perceptions and ensuring that that boom is protected and that it moves towards the correct trajectory. I think this is my last question. With regards to the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative, which is meant to benefit 1,400 young people, and it seems as though we didn't have sufficient funding for it, therefore we couldn't continue with it, what then becomes the way forward? Because I think unemployment, youth unemployment is a huge matter in our society, and we need to be able to find solutions to that particular matter. And then with the arrival of the vaccine as well, DG, there's just been a whole lot of self-proclaimed scientists that have emerged in society and created a lot of anxiety. Anxiety is okay when it's, I mean, COVID-19 has brought about a lot of anxiety in our society. But I think that there's also been an anxiety that's been created by people who are contributing to misinformation in society. And I think it's very important that the DSI and the great work that you're doing, as I mentioned at the beginning, I mean, through young scientists like Sandy Legrele, I think it's very important that the DSI continues to really strengthen its efforts of easing society's anxieties around the arrival of the vaccine, making them better understand this variant in South Africa, and just really creating or providing the correct narrative and the truth out there so that, you know, our citizens feel safe. Because already with, you know, COVID-19, people don't feel safe. And the last thing we need is for these communications and misrepresentations of the truth to then be further spewed. So I think for myself, DG, that's about it. I know at the hands of Honorable Lotriet from the DA, Honorable Lizie, Honorable Mananiso, Honorable Sevilla, and then Honorable King. I'll then note members' hands in that particular order. Honorable Lotriet.
Thank you very much, Chair, and good morning to everyone. Thank you very much for the presentations. One of the themes that runs right through it is the role of research and development and how important it is, specifically now in this time of the COVID pandemic. And thank you very much for the last presentation, focusing on that as well. DG, my big concern at this particular point is that given the budget cuts you have, and given the fact that the latest survey indicated that there is indeed a decline in R&D investment, specifically spending by government, this doesn't all go well for the increased R&D we are going to need in the times we are going in. Do you have any countermeasures that you are now implementing? Because there also seems not to have been a great uptake in terms of the tax incentive. So I would just like to hear your thoughts on how we're going to deal with this problem, because we now, instead of working towards 1.5 of GDP, we're actually declining. And I think we're at 0.75 now. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Lotriet. Honorable Lizier.
Thank you very much, Honorable Acting Chair. I want to apologize about the noise. You know, where we stay, they are busy with some renovations there, so there might be some sound coming from outside. I want to apologize in advance for that. Welcome, Honorable Lotriet. I think this might be the first time that we're with you in a meeting since you guys were redeployed to this committee. Thank you very much and welcome to the committee. Secondly, I want to, for the first time, Chair, congratulate Dr. Mboneni for getting his PhD. I think it was on the 11th of December when we learned that he has completed his PhD in Management of Technology and Innovation from the Da Vinci Institute. That I want to congratulate him. He's now Dr. Mboneni. And congratulations, Doc, on that part. DG, the department's original 2020-2021 allocation, budget allocation increased from 8.1 billion in the 2019-2020 financial year to the initial 8.8 billion. And this represented, when adjusted for inflation, a real increase of about 3.1%. And it was also what we call a real increase, the first real increase in the department budget since 2015-2016 financial year. However, the special adjustment budget revised the department's budget, 2020-2021 budget, from that 8.8 billion to about 7.36 billion. And the second adjustment budget further revised the department budget down from down by 83.6 million to 7.28 billion. Hence, the department's 2020-2021 budget decreased by 1.5 billion, 1.5 billion rands in total. DG, I would like to hear the department's feeling about this particular issue. Now, going to the questions, what are your key successes of the COVID-19 research and innovation program? And I heard Dr. Mboneni saying that the COVID-19 emanated from animals. Is this definitive? Because I read somewhere in the Wikipedia page that I wanted to read that thing. which gives, it says it's not clear, even though, you know, there's a chance that it might have emanated from animals, but it's not definitive. So maybe if you can just respond to that, is it definitive that it came from animals? And then the second one, how much has the DSI so far spent on each of the NSI COVID-19 focus areas, which are research and innovation, analytics and modeling, international cooperation, data generation and management, and manufacturing research and innovation? There was a point, there was a point, DG, I think it was on page 25 of your slides, where you give us the performance indicators of your different programs. And I think the total of those were, I've just lost my notes here, but I think the total were about 70 something, and we've only managed, wanted to get my notes here to get the exact numbers, but I seem not to get that, which is bad. But the point I was trying to make is that you have performed below the standard that you guys have set for yourselves. Yes, COVID-19 was there, and I know you indicated that some of them were not necessarily dependable on the department itself. It was, you know, dependent on other departments as well. So how are you then going to make sure that with the standards that you guys have set yourselves, you don't get such low performance on indicators? And how can the current initiatives with regard to the development and manufacturing of diagnostic kits or test kit reagent, personal protective equipment and sanitizer and ventilator stimulate the inclusive and sustainable growth for the local biomedical industry? And maybe how can STI skills and infrastructure be expanded, especially in critical areas, and with the spotlight clearly on digital technology to communicate, to conduct business, to conduct teaching and learning, to ensure governance, etc. how will the creation of an inclusive digital economy be fast tracked, and what is the role of your department and the broader NSI in these efforts? South Africa has been internationally praised for its COVID-19 response. I mean, we have seen WHO having held many press conferences and praising us. How can and or has this been leveraged to ensure increased STI resources for the NSI and for the entire continent? And maybe lastly, the size of Africa's economy and the connectedness of its population demands that Africa's response be unified. How can South Africa, as the AU chair currently, further motivate the need for dedicated sustainable investment in STI across the continent? But I think, Chair, I think it was in June last year when we held a meeting with yourself, with the Department of Science and Innovation, where they informed us that they are currently working on producing locally manufactured ventilators. Maybe if they can give us a response on how far are they with that, how many have they produced? I think they targeted about 10 or 11,000. How far are you with that, DG, with that? I mean, having noted that we've lost quite a number of people to COVID-19, some of them very close to ourselves, our colleagues, family members, and all of that. And when we spoke to them when they were in hospital, some of them would have indicated that they are sharing ventilators, 12 hours, they are on it, 12 hours it has to be used by somebody else. And they were telling us, I know a family member of mine who passed away in December, who was telling me on the phone that when it's the turn of the other person to use the ventilator, she would cough, could even hear on the phone coughing very, it sounded very painful. So how far are we with the production of this ventilators, and how many have we produced so far? Thank you very much. But I want to thank you guys for continuing to do as proud. Your presentation, has pulse. It's very detailed. It gives us, very limited space to ask questions, because you are very explicit in presenting your issues, and it makes it very easy to understand, even for non-scientists. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Lutie. Honorable Mananiso.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Let me firstly welcome all the presentations. And I must say that with this department, every time we seek to learn new things and the jargon itself that they are using. Chair, I want to say on some other inputs you have covered me with regards to issues that we always actually advise on, that more needs to be done. For instance, on their slide of slide 72 and 73, there's an improvement in terms of youth and women. However, one wants to say they need to as well focus on people with disability, so that we see specific numbers as they have indicated on women and youth. And one thing about this department is that when we advise, we are able to even take and trace the progress that they are doing, of which it's good. So I would want just to say to them, they need to do more with regards to people with disability. And the other thing, Chair, as a comment, is to say that perhaps the department, the DSI, needs to ensure that they strengthen their communication space with regards to disseminating information, so that we don't, for me, I still believe that when we speak to issues of science, technology and innovation. It's as if it's only for academics and professionals and a certain class. So I just wanted to say to them, they need to strengthen how they communicate with regards to their success stories to everybody, even on stations that we know that they are being used by people in rural areas, so that we take the country along in terms of knowing the space of science and innovation and technology. The other thing, Chairperson, that I just want to ask is with regards to programs that were impacted by COVID-19. I want to check if they have plans with regards to executing them, as we know that we are on level one, and level one, it's not that restricting that people can execute their program. So I want to check if they have those particular plans, can they submit them in writing to the PC so that the next time when we meet with them, we are able to take trace and measure if really they are not lagging behind on things that they have targeted as their achievements. Lastly, Chair, it's with regards to issues of indigenous programs. I must say that from the colloquium that we had with them, I'm very happy. Parliament, I'm able to see that when they speak indigenous, they are not just saying it as a tick box, but there's a transformational impact and agenda that is happening in that particular space. So Dr. Phil and the collective, keep on keeping on and keep the light burning, because of I believe you are the best department in terms of teaching this whole our sister departments on how it is important that we have a solid integrated approach as government to ensure that we resolve our issues as collective. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mananiso. Honorable Sibiya.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thanks for all presentations. From DG, page 30, performance of programs. Program one, only 33% of its target, which was achieved, is too low. What were most challenges faced by that department than other programs? And on page 33, the DSI has effected violence amounts to 133 million from slow spending activities. What is the cause of that slow spending activities? Page 67, the three public participation programs which were cancelled, is it because of that 53.4 million which was cut from the budget? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Sibiya. Honorable King.
Good morning, everyone, and thank you for the presentation. I also would like to thank the Chairperson in his absentia. When we requested SDA that this be brought onto the program, that he actually obliged by putting what research was done in the run-up to COVID-19. Basically, Honorable Dr. Lottridge has covered me, but I've got just one interesting question that I would like to know. Was the Caterpillar Pharmaceutical state-owned corporation used for any research purposes when it comes to the vaccine or any COVID-related vaccinations, especially on the indigenous plants that was presented? But once again, as always, coming back to this portfolio in science and technology, I must say I'm very impressed again with this portfolio and also then seeing that some of the stuff that when we left as Dr. Lottridge and myself, you are still feverishly tackling. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable King, and to all honorable members for their questions. I think that's all of us. I'll just lower everyone's hands quickly. Dr. Mungeni, can someone ask a question? of what they saw on Wikipedia. Honorable Lizzie, your lecturer from UKZN would not be impressed by you wanting to quote Wikipedia, but let's hope that maybe the response that Dr. Mofe is going to give us on where exactly this COVID-19 originates from, we'll be able to clarify whatever Wikipedia is saying to us. DG, together with your team, I think we're ready for your responses from honorable members. Noted the apology from Honorable Nimalo, who did indicate at the beginning of the meeting that we'll have to step out. Honorable Lithia, so I must leave you KZN alone. DG, we're ready for you.
Hey, you cannot start your video because it's been... Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thanks to the members for these insightful questions. As I go through them, I'll probably request some of the DDGs to come in perhaps at the end. And as I go along, I will alert them so they can come with the details. So the classification of black, I think it's African, Indian, and colors. So those are combined in the term black. So for those numbers that we have shown, it's the three groups. And then the second point raised by yourself, Chair, on the awareness and translating this into actionables. Yes, what we have, a lot of issues that you've raised are now in the Tech Health Plan. We are looking for platforms within government of having evidence-based policy making and or research informing policy. I think that's how we couched it. So even with these webinars and some of these initiatives, we will of course work fairly closely with the Department of Women, Youth and People with Disabilities to make recommendations of what has come out from research. But as I say, the big overarching initiative that we're driving as a department now is to excite the other departments that we have research entities and research that we fund that can provide evidence to some of the challenges that we have as a society. The establishment of the National Policy Data Observatory has really helped us in that regard because, for instance, even in the work for COVID, as Mboneni indicated, a lot of departments, when they need research, are beginning to say, what have you done as a Department of Science and Innovation? So there will be actions, and as I say, through this platform, we'll be able to take the recommendations from the studies that came out or the recommendations from the webinars and the HSRC study on GBV, then they will be taken on board. I hope Dr. Mwofe has the breakdown of the fuel cell training. I'll ask him to respond to that. Now, on representativity, I want to make a suggestion, Chairperson. Because what we have done as a department, I think we have now come up with a framework for transformation and inclusivity. That is, I think if I'm not mistaken, has got about 8 parameters that we have developed. And these include demographics, but they include spatial planning, you know, what happens in the different locations. They include the impact of the research that we're doing into society. So this framework that we have developed is now almost in the final stages. And what we would like to do in this framework is to start to collect data on the baseline of where we are. So if we say the research that we do is not impacting society, can we be clear which aspect of the society, which geographic location is it not doing that? If it's not impacting on the youth and women, so we are doing that analysis in order to report on this inclusivity and to develop, if you like, a response plan that will try and make sure that in the next 5 years, we have targets and indicators that will help in this. This has been informed by the white paper. So with your permission, there are a number of questions that are asked in this regard. When we come and present the Te Kettle plan that we've now completed, as I've indicated, where we're going to the detailed consultations, we would be more than happy to share that framework with you. So that answers your question 4 on representativity around COVID. But if Mboneni wants to add on that question, I'm more than happy to do so. And then the question in terms of the analysis of the work that has been done by the different programs, yes, we do know. For an example, the program 4 has done work to support COVID. They are responsible for the setting up of the National Policy Data Observatory. The policy observatory has got 3 legs. The one leg is the biomedical, so all the data that is collected, the data that we use for epidemiological analysis, the data that is used for tracking the movements of people, which is currently being used now, and it was used to inform the decisions that were made for the second wave restrictions. There's that leg. So it continues, and the CSIR is well established. Next time you visit the CSIR, it's an impressive center that we would encourage you to look at. The second leg is the social sciences and humanities leg. This is the leg of the surveys that have been done to get the impression of how people feel about themselves during COVID, what's happening in the townships as a result of poverty and as a result of what is happening out of those relief money that they receive. And then the third leg is the economic recovery. So this work then allows us to track or to have each program of the DSI, whether it's program T on program 2 on the biomedical side, they've played a very important role, and program 4 in terms of data analytics, as well as the Center for High Performance Infrastructure. Program 5, the social sciences and humanities work that they've been doing in that regard, together with the economic aspect. So each program has contributed. So it's a portfolio, if you would like us to indicate that, but we are convinced that that's what we have done. And then the issues of the direct impact to society, COVID-19 and linked to legacy. We've done a presentation recently to Cabinet on role of innovation in economic reconstruction and recovery, and some specific programs that Dr. Moore shared with the Committee on COVID. And this presentation was well received. And there we have a specific indication on the economic recovery, on the social contribution of research, science and technology, youth, and also how the economy can recover with using innovation to reindustrialization, as well as beginning to introduce digitalization in it. So we could also share with you how we see the role of innovation in the post-COVID economic recovery. This could be the same presentation, or we could have this one on the Te Kettle plan itself, and then the other one on post-COVID recovery. And then, as I say, on the Te Kettle plan, whenever you are ready, we're more than happy to share with you the thrust and the direction that it's taking. And one of the things, I will prelude this because some of the questions that come later are related to the proposals that the Te Kettle plan is making. We are proposing that for research or for science, technology and innovation to have the pervasive impact that we're looking for, the Department of Science and Innovation needs to work fairly closely with other government departments. And to do so, we are proposing 3 specific proposals. The first one is that the financing of the system, the science system, must not be a budget of the Department of Science and Innovation alone. It needs to have a budget that comes from other line departments nationally, provincial departments, and we are proposing in the Te Kettle plan a model which is used in Brazil, where the provinces earmark science, technology, and innovation money. And then we are proposing municipalities, if we are wanting innovation to improve service delivery to happen in municipalities, there has to be a budget. Now, we are proposing that the minister meet with ministers that, I think it's about 10 government departments that have STI intensive activities, agree on what size of the budget they want to earmark for taking some of the innovations that the National System of Innovation has been doing and could do going forward. So that's probably one of the key fundamental recommendations that we are making. And that, amongst others, on the governance and the financing and agenda setting, will begin to address some of the issues that Honorable Lotrit raised in terms of the R&D survey and the 1.2%, because in the exercise that we are proposing in the decadal plan, we've indicated what percentages of money should come from, as I say, the government, the public sector, the private sector, and international sources as well, to get to the 1.5 of the budget. Now, these are just proposals, and we are always looking forward to this efficient portfolio committee to also help us within Parliament. And one of the proposals just coming on top of my head, Chair, that maybe you would like to consider is perhaps an inter-portfolio committee presentation that we can do as part of what we see the economic recovery premised on innovation could look like, and how they could also ensure that the STI budgets from their portfolio committees are earmarked for research. But those are my thoughts, Honorable Lotrit, but they are, as I say, codified in the decadal plan, and we are now going to take this forward through this interministerial and the cabinet meeting that will be happening in 2 weeks' time. That also, to some extent, addresses Honorable Lecia's question around the declining budget. Our view is that we have to be very innovative around the budget we have, and we have to deploy it as efficiently as we could. And we think that the foundation that we are laying for the next 5 years using this budget is still a reasonable budget. Is it enough? Definitely no. And again, as I say, with these ideas that I've shared, and with carefully targeting some of the areas which could leverage additional funding from other government departments, we think that we would be able in the next 2 to 3 years get to the right. I will ask Professor Seledi to talk about IKS and the perception around its early, if you like, appreciation, and perhaps maybe not so at this point in time, and whether the observation that Honorable Chair made is something that we can act on going forward. I think with the IKS Act and what it's proposing, and some of the programs that were funded under the IKS program, we don't think so, but we are very much aware that perhaps we are not aware of some of these attempts to diminish, I think, what we think, at least from the DSI perspective, is a very good foundation that's been laid on the IKS program. But I'll ask him to speak to that. And then Mr. Patel, if he can talk about the youth initiative and the 1,400 numbers. As I say, my recollection, I may not have the exact numbers, is that we were able to reprioritize within the DSI to make sure that we get fairly closely to the target of 1,400, but he will be in a better position perhaps to do so. And then on the anxiety and the arrival of the vaccine, we are part of the interministerial committee, and there are three work streams that we are participating in. The first work stream is to look at how we can develop the local capability to develop and manufacture vaccines. The second one is the department supporting the Department of Health in the rollout of the vaccine through data and through monitoring the sites, the research sites that have been identified in the MRC. And then the third one is just the overall monitoring and oversight of this rollout as a whole. It's called implementation research. And in this program, we are able to contribute as a department in also into the communication of the efficacy of the vaccine, people who have been vaccinated and whether it's having the impact that it is having. So more than happy to share with you the contribution that we are making on all of these three fronts at an appropriate time. Honorable Otrit, I think I've tried to respond to your question around our initial thoughts and how the decadal plan proposes to get to 1.5%. And then Honorable Letzie around working with what we have and deploying it in a very carefully and a targeted way to have programs that will attract additional money in the next years or so. I'm hoping Dr. Moofe would comment on the origins of COVID-19 from animal bats, I think, into the human, including the 341 million that was earmarked for COVID-related activities. Maybe he can comment on that as well. And then the issue about 59% of indicators as being a very low number, I think this also is similar to Honorable Sibiya. What we did, and this we can submit to yourself as Honorable Mananiso requested, we developed what we called a recovery plan for the programs that had low targets at the time. And we are tracking these now almost on a monthly basis at EXCO to make sure that we don't go below at least our 80%. So there is a deliberate attempt. If David Makula, the acting DDG, would like to talk about this, we are more than happy. I'm happy that he adds. And then the growth of biomedical industry, skills and future areas, Honorable Letzie, if you would, if the chair agrees, we have a well-defined plan on the economic recovery and the decadal plan on digital economy. We call it the new sources of growth, the greening of the economy, the skills associated with the fourth industrial revolution. In fact, the two departments now are finalizing what is called the innovation enabled recovery with the skills supported. So there is an interface between ourselves and the Department of Higher Education around how well we can then refine that. So if at an appropriate time you'd like us to share this with yourself, we're fine. On the ventilators, 22,000 of these ventilators were eventually produced. And the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition shared with us in one of the meetings I had with the National Advisory Council that they are developing a full export plan of these ventilators to the rest of the continent through the Africa Free Trade Continental Agreement. So we working with them, there's a detailed breakdown. We can give the details, I think, through a letter to the chair on this plan that they are having, but the 22,000 was what was finally produced. Unfortunately, the at the time, there was no anticipation of the second wave. So the 22,000 was what was produced at the time on the basis of, but of the projections. But to produce these now should not be a problem because I think we have developed the whole value chain to do so. And then Honorable Mananiso, yes, we do realize that public awareness and engagement is one of our not so strong points. But you'd be happy to know that the NRF Act has been amended. And one of the amendments was proposing that the NRF sets up a very well-structured program on public engagement on science activities. And in the new APP that they are finalizing, we've asked them to strengthen this area because this is what I think we would like to see, and this is what the Act expects of them. But we think we've tried and we have learned lots of lessons on the COVID-19 around how we can really get the public excited about science and research and how science can be effective on people's lives. So we can build on what we have learned in this work. The question you've raised around mitigating around delays on each of the programs in writing, we are happy to do so. I'm not so sure if David and Nombuyiselo can explain the decline of 33%, but it was mainly because this program is the one that is hugely affected by the lockdowns. So issues of public engagement, issues of communication, and issues that relating to the procurement are in program one. So they had to be reprioritized, which we have now done. So even though the target is low because of the first wave and what happened, we think we are on track to meet that target. The slow spending varies. Sometimes some programs are new and it takes time for them to be fully functional to absorb resources that we have given them. Sometimes it's infrastructure program, like the infrastructure program for the high performance computing and the rollout of SunRen and fiber into institutions, as well as the infrastructure, for instance, for the build of the SKA. Those programs, you can never be accurate in terms of when they will spend the money because construction is dependent on the progress. So, however, we try and manage this and make sure that we have early signals of alerting us, and me in particular as an accounting officer, to redirect the funds where they are slow spending. Mutla could comment on the three PPPs that were cancelled, but it would probably because of COVID-19. And I would ask Dr. Moofe if he wants to comment on Honorable King's question on Kitlapila use for research and vaccine and indigenous work towards COVID. So that covers most of the questions, unless I've missed something. So may I perhaps start with Dr. Seleti on IKS, followed by Mr. Patel on the Presidential Youth Initiative, and also invite Dan if he wants to say anything about the international aspect of our work towards COVID, and then Dr. Moope if he wants to add one or two things, animal COVID-19 origins, 341 spending where we are, on that, if he wants to add anything, and then the key capella. Dr. Professor Seleti.
Good morning, DG, and good morning to the portfolio committee, esteemed members. The response to the question is quite interesting. Probably it would also require a study of the media. And much of it would be as a result of the reporting. And I think that the initial stimulus to the excitement was with the Malagasy discovery and sharing that globally. And that attracted a lot of media. But the foundation of this is that the work that was done in Malagasy had resulted from the training that our scientists had given to them in the bioprospecting research work. And so it wasn't new to our scientists. It is something that they were very familiar with. And therefore, when the heat got out of that, probably the impression given is that there was less attention that was going on. But we have made tremendous progress. And probably it's because we've taken COVID-19 as an opportunity to advance the work of IKS. On the bioprospecting work, there's been an advance in the almost towards the creating a subcommittee under the South African Health Products Authority so that indigenous medicines will have its own attention and processes of being approval. And as you could have read from the reports, we are already getting into the clinical research and setting up infrastructure within our system, such as at the University of Free State, where medicines will be tested almost up to the market level. So we are building a very strong foundation on getting scientifically based and proven medicines into the market. That progress is a lot. But my colleagues as well, Dr. Shupeka and Dr. Moefi, have built a link, not only from the testing of the medicines, but also how to get to the industry. So they brought in cooperation with the IDC, small enterprises, on how do we roll out the production of medicines, either if it's agricultural inputs or it is manufactured inputs. So that value chain is being created and strengthened. And I think that's an exciting part of that work. There is also continuing work on the grassroots levels. The IKS awareness, which the Portfolio Committee called for on the Act, has been going on in all the provinces. I think only Western Cape is remaining. So communities in the remotest rural areas have been reached out and been. So there is activities even under the lockdown. It has gone on in the intermittent times that we have had openings. I am participating at the moment in the portfolio committee from Durban in that we are also looking at the recognition of prior learning. That is how we will recognize the traditional healers around the competencies that they have. And there are three pilots that are ready to be rolled out in KwaZulu-Natal, Northwest, and Limpopo. So there is work that is going on. So as the DG indicates, we are of the view that this work is not on the radar of the media, but rather the communities that are involved in it, that's at the local level, and the scientists that are involved in it, and the government departments working together in this have pushed the frontiers to places where we have never been before. So we feel that we have built quite a sound foundation going forward. And at appropriate times, we will make the noise, such as the launch of the registration system of indigenous knowledge, which we used to call the National Recorder System. We'll relaunch it, and then there'll be a lot of fanfare and the like. So yes, there is a lot of work. The perception is not really what we see on the ground. We have not been demobilized. In fact, we have made much more progress than ever before in the 9 months. I wish to submit that. Thank you.
Thanks, Yona. Imran?
Thanks, DG. Can people hear me? Greetings to the portfolio committee members and also the Deputy Minister who I see is on the line. On the Presidential Youth Employment Initiative, just some quick background. I think the Portfolio Committee will remember that this wasn't a target and indicator that we had included in the APP that was signed in February last year. This came about as a result of the employment stimulus, the large-scale employment stimulus program that the Presidency introduced after we started feeling the impacts of the COVID-19 crisis. And so the process took a much longer time. It was a very, very intense couple of months to submit proposals, for the proposals to be evaluated, et cetera. terms of the DSI, we had submitted proposals for 4 interventions targeting graduates in 3 instances and one to provide experiential learning experience for people who are at the artisan level, their P1s and P2s. The programs are at the HSRC. It's 1,000 young people that we're planning to take on board for what we call a health promotions agents project. There's a second one, which is called EnviroChamps, which is around using graduates to, in fact, do environmental data collection, et cetera, in the KZN area, the Tuzi area. The third one is working with the WRC to take on board 400 young graduates and provide them with work experience, both in a research environment and in a technical environment. And the fourth one was building on our existing experiential learning program, where we provide people with their work integrated learning opportunities, but using the technology stations and the technology localization program. So all of these programs, we got additional funding of about 45 million, but the actual cost of the program were more closer to 63 million rands, a bit more. We then had to go into a period of intensive engagements with the implementing agencies to see how we can cut back on the budget. And even with the cutbacks and, you know, modifying the program, for example, the health promotion agents wanted a bigger spread of people. We then concentrated it a lot more, et cetera. So we did some design tweaks and we got down the cost. And then we were in the process of looking at potential savings due to other programs that were not effective. And we then managed to, by December, find an arrangement where the programs could continue at the scale that they were originally intended. Our target is to reach 1,850 young people in this financial year. Our target was 1,700, but we were able to get an additional amount. So that's part of the reason why we then were not able to get the 1,400 that we thought we would get on board by December. There were other challenges that we encountered in running out the program, which we've shared with the presidency and others, because this is in fact an attempt at very large scale programs. And obviously a key one is how do you select the beneficiaries? So we went out in a competitive process, open call process, and in the case of the 400 that we were going to take on under the WRC program, I think we received about a couple of thousand applications, so that had to go through. In the case of the HSRC one, we received an overwhelming number of about 5,000, just for 1,000 spots. And so, trying to interview that many people, et cetera, creating process, so that we're thinking of other creative means to take on the beneficiaries. So at the moment, we're in regular touch with the entities. I think the WRC 400 people are on board and have been deployed. The 300 EnviroChamps are on board. There's some delays with 1,000 health promotion agents. But I think about 300-400 are on board. I can get exact numbers and we can send this. And then the experiential learning program is well on board. So we're quite confident that we will achieve our annual target of 1,700 beneficiaries. Thanks, DJ.
Imran, Dan, any updates on the COVID-related work internationally, just to give the members a flavor, and then we'll hand over to Mboneni.
Thank you. Thank you very much, DJ, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Deputy Minister. Just very briefly, as COVID-19 is a disease which knows no borders, also the response has to be an international one, and the department therefore has been very actively engaged in a whole range of international partnership activities. These were articulated around 3 key objectives. One, to enable a sharing of experience and expertise and for countries to learn from each other. Secondly, to attract foreign investment international funding to supplement our own funding. And then thirdly, for our efforts to play a role as part of science diplomacy to strengthen international cooperation. On the first objective, the sharing of experience and expertise, we've had an intense series of dialogues with countries across the world. Most recently, for example, a very successful meeting was held with our counterparts in Cuba last Thursday for the two countries to share experience, for example, in vaccine development. But as the Director General also presented in his progress report, there's a huge portfolio of joint research and innovation projects which South Africa is co-funding with partners across the world. The BRICS portfolio was mentioned, but this is also happening with the European Union. And this covers a whole range of activities spanning vaccine, diagnostic development to, for example, the use of artificial intelligence and data science, or, for example, using wastewater management tools to better analyze the spread of COVID-19. Secondly, with regard to attracting foreign funding, international investment, at this stage, we've been successful directly to secure more than 100 million rand, largely from the European Union, for investment in various COVID-19 initiatives being implemented in our national system of innovation. This is largely as a result of a big program called the European Developing Countries Clinical Trials Partnership. And then just to conclude, in terms of strengthening national partnership, our focus has been on our own continent, on Africa, and how we could bolster the efforts of the African Union and the Southern African Development Community. And there, in partnership with a number of international partners, we have successfully launched the Africa Rapid Grant Fund with a total budget of more than 100 million rand. And there's a 15 million rand of African investment which have leveraged the additional 85 million rand. And this, through our National Research Foundation, we are currently supporting more than 80 projects in 20 different African countries, covering a whole range of themes on using science advice for policy making, supporting science journalists for science communication, and indeed collaborative research, all response to COVID-19. So as Professor Saleti has mentioned, as for the Indigenous Knowledge Systems portfolio, we have had the duty to respond through international cooperation to COVID-19, but it has also unlocked and opened new exciting opportunities for South Africa to further enhance its profile on the global scene. Thank you, DG. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Dan and Dr. Muofe, on the series of animal COVID, the budget, and Kitlapela funding. Thank you.
DG, it's gone quiet on your side. Have you concluded on your response?
No. Sorry, Chair. We accidentally muted. Dr. Mwabe is here.
Good morning. Just a quick response on the questions that have been raised. And I'm going to start on the one around the representation of the graduates who were trained on the installation and the maintenance of fuel cells. The learners were all black learners recruited predominantly from TVET colleges, but a few from the technicons, former technicons. And in terms of the gender split, it's out of the 15 that graduated, 8 were women and 7 were men. We have another cohort that has started now, 10 of them, of which 6 are women and 4 are men. Now, the program has now reached a point where the university is wanting to work with all the partners to sign a long-term agreement. So that's basically just in summary. Now, on the on the issue of the vaccine anxiety, which the DG has also addressed, one of the things that we are working on with other government departments, including with GCIS, is to communicate, because the anxiety was coming from a number of areas. One of them was the issue of all sort of scaremongering around what the vaccine can and will do to people. So we have created a platform of engagement with GCIS on a weekly basis, where we talk about facts around the vaccines. We've also had webinars, which included one that we did with the the World Health Organization, we did with the CDC Africa, and also with our Minister of Tourism. So those are about informing the society on the facts around science and its impact, including on the economy. We also have been doing a number of radio interviews just to provide that level of clarification. Now, on the question of the budget, that was reprioritized and its usage. There were also a number of other initiatives that I think in the interest of time we couldn't cover. For example, the allocations that were made to support work that was being done with the Space Agency. Honourable members may recall that when the announcement was made of the fact that there will also be support to spaza shops, we had to go out and map spaza shops throughout the country where they are, because that also needed to have data that will show those spaza shops that may have been created immediately after the announcement and those that were existing even before the announcement. So we're able to pick up the activities around specific spaza shops prior to the announcement and after the announcement so that we can provide that data. So that data, which was provided through what we call remote sensing or using satellite data, was also part of the project that we have done. Now, that funding was not entirely enough. So there was an announcement of an additional, for example, 25 million that we need to provide for our genomic surveillance work. So that kind of work, we have to still reprioritize funding elsewhere to fund it. But basically, we have managed to deploy those resources, and I'm pleased to say gainfully so. And as the results are showing, we can see that the scientific community was also upping their sleeves quite early in the game. The question or comments by Honorable Itzia on the origin of the virus. So there seems to be consensus around this being a zoonotic disease. In other words, that it actually did come from animals. There isn't clarity yet as to what animal was it, whether it was a bat or whether it was a pangolin. However, there have been a lot of debate around the actual point of spillover, whether the spillover was caused by a leak or an escape from the laboratory, or whether it was really coming from the wet market. And the work that was done by the fact-finding mission seems to rule out the issue of the leak or the escape from the lab. So it basically is still pretty much, even in terms of its behavior, it is behaving like the previous zoonotic viruses that have actually spilled over from animals. So that particular hypothesis or argument still holds. The question around the role of Gitla Pila in vaccine manufacturing in IKS. So that probably would, for now, I would say it would be subject to a presentation that we are yet to make in terms of just clarifying where the whole work around the pharmaceutical readiness of South Africa is. However, Gitla Pila is, even though it was registered as an entity, it didn't exist as a company that has got employees and facilities or anything. So nothing of what is being done now is happening in the context of Gitla Pila. And the other thing is, even if it were in existence, it wasn't going to be involved in vaccines because it was going to focus on chemical APIs, which is those that are used in drugs, as opposed to the biological products like vaccines. So the whole IKS work is being done with universities and science councils. So you find that we've got the Akasha Research Council, the CSIR, and also TIA, which is hosting a number of platforms, and universities such as University of Venda, University of KwaZulu-Natal, University of the Free State, and in some instances also Wits University and University of Pretoria. So those are the institutions that are involved, and that probably is just the coverage in terms of who is involved. I think DG, I've covered everything.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Yes, thanks very much to all the DDGs for their input. So, Chair, we hope we've covered everything, and we hand back over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, DG, and to all our colleagues from the DSI. Honourable members, I hope you're sufficiently covered by the responses from the department. But we know that this is not the last meeting that we have with them. But also to clarify that, you know, the commitment of the portfolio committee to ensure that it gets regular updates from the Department of Science and Innovation in relation to its COVID response is a commitment that we've had, you know, since the first update we received by the DSI on its COVID response. And then this is all in part and parcel of ensuring that we're able to monitor, you know, what is happening and be able to communicate to, you know, our constituents, because this is in line with our commitment as members of parliament to take parliament to the people and to bring the people to parliament. So the conversation of bringing this this agenda item to the fore has been a commitment to the portfolio committee way before other members joined the portfolio committee, and I think that must be clarified, particularly because of our concern with regards to the budget reprioritization and the impact it has had on the work of the DSI, in particular also with response in relation to research and development. I think that must be clarified. And so, yeah, so I think from that end, we must say thank you very much to the DSI. I think, DG, listening to members and listening to yourselves as well, there is a continued concern in relation to the budgetary cuts or the reprioritization of the budget, in particular on the program on research and development. But yet the department continues to do so much great work in that regard. But I think, as Honorable Lizia then says, is how you know, the analysis and the monitoring of whether or not the department will be able to sustain this going into the future. From previous meetings as well, I think the great concern was, okay, we might be able to cope in the now, but what impact will that then have going into the future? Will we be able to sustain the changes that have been able to, will we be able to sustain and the change under the changes that have been made due to this to these budget cuts? I think a great concern then also comes out in terms of the IKS Act, or rather an interest, rather the great interest around the IKS Act. There's great acknowledgement of the work that has been done in relation to responding to the COVID-19 pandemic, and I think as a recommendation, Shanaz, and to the research units of the portfolio committee, I think we could look into considering a joint or an inter-portfolio committee with other portfolio committees who would be relevant in terms of us looking into the science and innovation budgets in relation to those that are earmarked for research and development across various departments. I think that recommendation from the DG is one that should be considered and one that we could take forward and could be led by ourselves. But I think by and large also the DG has spoken greatly to a lot of work that needs a collaborative effort, and we need to, as a portfolio committee, as we continue to do our work, then just consider how we work with other portfolio committees in looking into these areas. But by and large, I think most questions of members were answered, and therefore we can excuse the DG together with the DM. DM did join us at some point. DM, welcome to the meeting. I don't know if there's anything you'd like to say. I know I have sort of summarized the meeting, but if there is anything you'd like to say, you can go ahead, or just greet members so that we can hear your voice. DM. Okay, the DM might be struggling with his audio, but I did speak to him, and oh, there we go.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. We've just, as I indicated, I think the DG and the DDGs have got it covered, so I'm good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, DM. So honorable members, I think it's been a fruitful conversation, as always is. Of course, as well, I guess maybe in terms of the recommendations, one, we should consider the issue around the finalization of the decadal plan and making greater strides towards that. And it's been of a concern of the portfolio committee for a long time now. Issues around awareness and science and innovation actually had a concern, DG, but maybe because we're closing the meeting, I will have this conversation offline with regards to a question Honorable Lizier had asked in relation to the ventilators, and just a lot of work was being done by various universities of technology in that regard, and TVS as well. And it would be very interesting to have understood how the department has been able to support these or work in collaboration with various universities of technology and TVS in responding to COVID-19. Just an update, because you had already indicated in the first meeting that we had the work being done there. So these are just generally updates. And of course, the Department of Higher Education and Training on its end has also indicated to us a lot of the work they've been doing through the Universities of Technology and TVIC in responding to COVID-19. So, I mean, it's a cross-cutting issue in terms of the two departments under this ministry, but, that's a conversation you can have later on. But honorable members have asked their questions, and I think most of them have been responded to adequately. DG did indicate that there are a few matters that you'd like to bring to our attention in writing. I think also the issue around the framework, the representation framework that the department is currently working on, and maybe we could make a time for it to be presented to us separately at a later stage. I think that's something we must also consider in our closing remarks. Otherwise, honorable members or colleagues rather, I think this part of the meeting can come to an end, and thank you very much for your time. We'll now continue the meeting and go into the minutes.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, DG. Okay, as we go into the minutes, honorable members, we have 9 minutes that we need to adopt this morning. It's still morning. There's still 7 minutes before the end of the morning. There are 9 minutes we need to adopt. I know Honorable Madeniso might want us to do them in batches, but I think they're quite short. If you look at each of the minutes on each day, they're quite short. So let me just start on the 3rd of March. Are there any amendments or comments that members have on the minutes on the 3rd of March? It was the first day of our oversight inquiry on SMU. If not, can I note hands to adopt? Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chair. Now you have dislodged me, because I was ready to firstly adopt actually the 4 sets of minutes that were sent on the 19th. Ne? So I'm not sure if before I adopt this one, can I just be noted that all the 4 sets that were sent on the 19th of February, they are a true reflection of the meeting. And I would like to adopt as well this one of the 3rd of March as a true reflection of the meeting. Thank you.
Okay, I'm not with you. Can you just, Shanaz and Anela, can you assist with this? So The email I have with me has the minutes since the 3rd of March. There's 9 of them there. Okay, so let's start perhaps. Okay, let me do it this way. Sorry, Honorable Mananus. I think the fault is on my side because this email does not have them in chronological order in terms of date. Okay, we'll start on the 10th. And then, sorry, I'm trying to open each of the minutes from, okay. So let's do it like this.
I've sent you, sorry, I've sent you a message on the chat. If you can just see the chronology of the minutes, just check your message on the chat.
Okay, there we go. Yeah, that's how it's now appearing. Okay. All right. So we'll start with the minutes from the 10th. The ones from February would be the 10th, the 12th, the 16th, 17th, 19th, 23rd, and 24th. I would prefer, Honorable Manani, so that we do it day by day. I don't think that it should take us long because, as I had said, the minutes aren't many. They're not long, sorry. The minutes of each day aren't long, so I don't think it should take us long. So we'll start on the ones of the 10th, and then we'll go in that particular order. So on the 10th, we had a meeting with NASFIS in relation to its annual report, and the Auditor General of South Africa also joined us. Can I note any changes that members would like to make to those particular minutes? If not, can we adopt those minutes, please? Can I note hands that seek to adopt? Okay, Honorable Manus, hand is up. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, I wanted to indicate that I move for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of the meeting. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Can I note a hand to second them? I see Honorable Sibiya.
Okay, thanks, Chairperson. I'm seconding the minutes proposed by Honorable Manani.
Okay, so the minutes for on the briefing by NASFIS on the annual report have then been adopted. We'll now move on to the next minutes, which are the minutes on the 12th. And that was a briefing on MUT and on governance and related matters. Can I note any hands that seek to make any amendments? If not, can we then adopt those minutes? Can I note hands? I see the same hands are up. Honorable Manani, so is that a new hand?
No, it's not a new hand. However, one wants to as well adopt the minute as a reflection of the meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Manani. So, second, I see Honorable Itziye.
Thank you, Siyabong. Seconded.
All right. The minutes on MUT are adopted. We'll then move on to the 16th of February. Okay, that was with, I think that was our first day, yes, of the inquiry on SMU. Can I note hands that seek to adopt if there are no amendments? Honorable Letsie, Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chair. I adopt the minutes as a true reflection of the meeting.
Hey, second.
Thank you very much. We'll move on to the 17th. All right, that was again on the inquiry that was still on our first week. No time to adopt, please.
Honorable Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chair. I adopt the minutes as a true reflection of the meeting. Thank you.
Okay, second that, please. Honorable Sibiya?
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to second the adoption of the minutes. Thank you.
Okay, we're now moving on to the minutes on the 23rd. Am I correct? Am I skipping a date? 23rd. Moving on to the 23rd of February, which was the HSRC's briefing on the gender survey or gender-based violence survey. Can I note a hand to adopt?
Are we done with the 19th?
No.
I did skip a date. I felt like I had skipped a date. Okay. Sorry about that, honorable members. Let's go back to, because that's now the third day, on the SMU inquiry. Can I note hands that seek to amend? If there are no amendments, can we then adopt? Honorable Lucia.
Thank you. We move for the adoption of the minutes as they are.
Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chair. I second the minutes as adopted by Honorable Lucia.
Thank you, ma'am. Okay, now we can go on to the minutes of the 23rd. Can I note a hand to adopt or to make amendments? If there aren't any, then we'll adopt. Okay, Honorable Mananiso.
Thank you, Chairperson. I herewith adopt the minutes as a true reflection of the meeting.
Thank you. Honorable Sibiya.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to second the adoption of the minutes. Thank you.
Minutes on the HSRC's briefing on the gender-based violence survey have been adopted. We're now moving on to the briefing by TUT and CPUT on governance and related matters. That was on the 24th of February. Honorable Lucia, can I note hands that seek to amend? If there aren't any, then can we adopt, Honorable Lucia?
Thanks, Chair. On the resolutions of that meeting, on our over, it says here, point one, an oversight visit be undertaken to TUT and CPUT to afford universities sufficient time to respond to the issues raised by the committee. I think this one, Chair, it was made clear that on TUT, when we go there, would want them to give us a detailed response on two tests, operational things there. So I thought maybe it should be noted as such that, because we don't want them to go through our minutes and think maybe it's just to answer certain. We said when we go there, the main focus of that will be on Tute, and we want detailed operations of Tute. So I'm not sure if you remember this, Anele. So that I think we must capture it correctly this one.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Lizier. Anele, has that been noted as something that must be added under the resolutions?
Yes, with.
It's noted in discussions, but it's not noted under resolutions.
Yes, mainly because it's not just about Tute. That we are going to visit the university. There are also other issues that were not covered during the meeting. So we don't want to limit it just to TUTE. Hence, we just broadly indicated that the university should respond to the issues that were raised to the committee. There are quite many besides TUTE.
Okay. Honorable Lucia, are you okay with that response? Or do you feel that it is important that it be covered under resolution?
Well, the minutes should be a reflection of the meeting. So if there are issues that we did not discuss in the meeting, Ideally, I agree with Anna, but remember the minutes should reflect what was discussed in the meeting. And I remember resolving as per the request that two terms do a proper details report or presentation for us on two terms. You see, the reason I'm raising this one is that we go to these institutions, Chair, and they don't, we ask them to do a presentation on something and they just go high level. If you remember the discussion of that day, we're complaining about the high level kind of presentation they prepared on Twitter. And even when chat closed, Anna did say that. Well, a lot of members raised concern about that. And Chair would have then said, we want a detailed, when we come to when you go to QT, want a detailed presentation of the operational matters of Tute. If obviously if colleagues believe we must just leave it as it is, that's not a problem. But I felt we might go to that institution and still get the same thing if we don't capture it correctly. But I move for the adoption with or without the.
All right, that's fine. I think the account of Honorable Itzia is correct, Anele, particularly for the reasons raised around the vagueness of many of the presentations that come forth and Tute being of great concern. So let's add it. Let's make the particular amendment to the resolutions. And it would be TUT on perhaps separating the two, right? So give TUT its own reason on what we want to look into during the oversight, and then put CPUT under its own bullet.
Noted.
With that amendment, can I please note hands that speak to respond. So it wouldn't just be on oversight visit to be undertaken at TUT on a detailed two-tier report. It would be on TUT governance and administrative and related matters, including two-tier, if that makes sense. And then CPUT can have its own bullets in terms of the oversight that we're going to conduct there. Okay, we'll then move on. So can I note hands that seek to adopt the minutes with those particular amendments?
I've moved for the adoption already, Chair.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Lipie. Honorable Manani, so your hand has been up.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Let me adopt the minutes with amendments made by Honorable Lipie. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honorable Manani. So, what must happen?
She must second. The minutes have been... We've moved for the adoption, so she must second.
Okay, so you'd like her to be more specific. Honorable Munani, so can you be more specific?
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Lizzie, I second the minutes with amendments. Thank you.
As adopted by himself. Hey, Honorable Lizzie. Okay, so Honorable Member, that was... the minutes from TUT and CPUT's briefing on their governance and related matters. That was on the 24th of February. Those have been adopted. So I think we can now move on to the month of March, starting on the 2nd of March. And on the 2nd of March, we then continued with the inquiry on Prof. Mbati and Univen related matters or SMU and related matters. So can I note any amendments to these minutes? If there aren't any, we can then move to their adoption. Honorable Celia, your hand is up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to adopt the minutes of the 24th March. Thank you.
Okay. On the 2nd of March, Honorable Sibia.
Yes, on the 2nd of March. Okay,
okay. No worries. All right. Can I note a hand to second the adoption?
Debzinho, second.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Lizie. We're now moving to the minutes on the 3rd of March. And that was the continuation of the inquiry as well. Can I note a hand, Honorable Mananiso?
Thank you, Chairperson. I herewith move for the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection of the meeting.
Okay, thank you very much. Can I note a hand to second the adoption? Honorable Sibia.
Thanks, Chairperson. I would like to second the adoption of the minutes of the 3rd March. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable members, if I'm not mistaken, through your guidance, Anele and Shanaz, that should bring us to the end of those minutes.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. That brings us to the end of our meeting, honorable members. Thank you so much for your time. It's now 11 minutes past 12, which gives us 2 hours, well, just under 2 hours before the sitting of the House. Thank you very much. We will see you tomorrow. Have a lovely afternoon.
Thank you, Chair.
Shop on Elena.
Thank you so much, Robert.